we were discussing a tiny little scripture called the Gita. Where the student happened to be a warrior. Just a few minutes ago we were discussing, can a yogi be so and so, can a yogi be so and so? Here is Arjuna who is a warrior. Anyone can be yogi. To be established in yoga is something different. That's what we are out to discover. But before he discovered the truth, what the truth is again, we shall have to rediscover for ourselves. This hero, Arjuna, was shaking. Why was he shaking? He himself says so, very plainly. I see my friends and my relations in front of me. I can't fight them, which is probably very sensible. See the trick here. Two days ago, we were discussing the undesirability of looking for do's and don'ts. Because the moment I get these do's and don'ts, I'm not keen on living up to them, I am keen on trying to find out how to slip out of them. One wants the security of 10 commandments, but one is not keen on observing these 10 commandments. We want to be told this is right and that is not right. The moment you give me a commandment, this is right, I look at it, try to figure out how best I can make use of it to further my own ends. Tomorrow you go to the beach and suddenly, like the Dead Sea Scrolls, you find a pot and it says, it rolled from India 1700,000 years ago. You bring it to me, Swami, have you seen this? You know what I will do? Start a business. Yes? Huh? No? Do we want the truth at all for its own sake, or do we want it for other things? When I have these 10 commandments, thou shalt not kill, and thou shalt not do this, and thou shalt do this, thou shalt not commit adultery, and therefore divorce the husband before getting hitched to somebody else, that's also adultery. Where is the difference? So the moment we get these rules and regulations into our hands, we are only going to try to make use of them. Non-violence is good. But are you non-violent within you? That is the point. That's what you want to know. That's what you said. I must be established in yoga. Then all these things may become clear. If I am established in non-violence, it does not mean that I will not bury a dead body. Have you thought of that? Will you bury me now? Obviously not. You are murdering me. You are killing me. But if I am dead, will you bury this? Of course. Otherwise it will rot. However much you love me. So if you are established in yoga, then your action is spontaneous. Otherwise, you are going to misuse those do's and don'ts. I still remember an extraordinary young man I met in Israel, one of the few with whom I lost my temper. This was during my first visit to Israel in 1965. I was staying with a wonderful couple in a small village called Rishpon. One young man, having heard I was there, rushed in. "Oh, Swami, you are from India." I said, "Yes." "I am a follower of Gandhi." I said, "That's interesting, that there must be a follower of Gandhi in Israel. Very encouraging thing." I asked him, "Why do you say, how do you say so, sir?" He said, "No, I believe in his non-violence. And therefore, I refuse to fight. I've told the army I will not go to the battlefield." I asked him, "Why do you want to take Gandhi's name for this? You can as well say, I am afraid. If I hear some guns, boom, 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 I get giddy. So I don't want to go. That's more honest. Why do you want to bring in a great ideal and a great name, a great principle, to cover your own cowardice?" Oh, he got very cross. He thought I would fall in love with him and appreciate him, you know. "Ah, what a wonderful holy man you are, living in Israel, you are still practicing non-violence and love and so on." And I told him, "You know, if Gandhi had been here, you know what he would have done? Huh? He would have completely disarmed himself, probably half naked or three-fourths naked, gone to the battlefront, sat there between the two armies, 'Please don't fight.' Then he receives one bullet from here, one bullet from here, that's all. That is called non-violence. Cowardice is not non-violence. You are a coward. You can do nothing. Why do you want to pretend that I am non-violent because I am afraid to fight? That's afraid to fight. That's the truth. Even Mahatma Gandhi, who is considered the apostle of non-violence, etc., 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 even he said, given the option of fear or fight, I'll say fight. Must I withdraw out of cowardice? No, no. The gospel of non-violence is not cowardice. It's very important to bear this in mind. So here is a man standing between two armies, when it is his duty, to arrest wickedness. Like, for instance, you're a policeman. It's your duty to arrest, stop wickedness. And if this man is going to say, "Oh no, I won't. He is trying to choke this lady. I go to stop him, but then I find he is my brother-in-law. Well, how can I stop him? Why not? It's my job to stop him. Whether he is Mr. So-and-so or my brother-in-law." And therefore, Krishna reveals the truth. All this stage was being set up like the toothpaste stage here. They were setting up that stage throughout the day. I don't know what they did eventually. All this stage was being set up, the battlefield, the armies, the fighters and that, etc., etc. The whole thing was being set up in order to reveal a wonderful truth. What is our relationship? What is our relationship? This man, this hero Arjuna, says, I don't want to kill them, because if I kill them, they will die and then I'll go to hell. As if you don't kill me, I'll still be alive perpetually. Do you think so? Supposing you don't kill me, will I live forever? So what? The yogi does not make
too much of killing or not killing, that sort of thing doesn't appeal to him at all. The yogi is keen on the perception of the truth. Once the truth is seen, and in that truth our relationship becomes clear, then the action is spontaneous. I wish those of you who are more deeply interested in this would read any abridged version of the thing called Mahabharata. This Bhagavad Gita forms part of the big epic called Mahabharata. Small little books are available. Very interesting. Great sages were there on the battlefield. There was a man called Bhishma. He says, "Aha, what a wonderful man. You are my disciple. You are my... I love you." Hit him. Hit him, yes. Hit him, hit him. We are fighting. When it comes to fighting, of course I want to fight. No. There you are not my disciple. You are not my friend. You are... I don't love you at all, my son. No, no, no. I hit you. How did they do... How did they do that? This remarkable truth was revealed by Krishna in one verse, and this can be used as a talisman. I have done it very often. Ashochya namashochastvam prajñavadamscha bhashase gatasu nagatasumscha namashochanti panditaha. Hey fool, you are grieving unnecessarily. You are worrying unnecessarily. That is the essence of the whole scripture. Worry and fear are both same, yes? Two sides of the same coin. Do you see that? Huh? Worry and fear are just two sides of the same coin. I am afraid and therefore I worry myself. I worry myself, and as I worry, this fear builds up. And he says, you are worrying unnecessarily. Gatasun agatasumcha nanushochanti pandita. Wise people do not worry over what has been and what may be or will be. What a grand truth. Wise men do not worry over what has been or what may be or will be. Isn't this what we are worried about all the time? The present does not create any worry in us at all. The present meaning now. Totally unrelated to yesterday, totally unrelated to tomorrow, the now. That does not create any worry at all in me. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Wonderful. Did you hear what I said? I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, so why must I worry? I did something which I should not have done yesterday. Okay, finished. Full stop. Nothing that you do is going to cancel that. You know, I have only been traveling westward up to Canada and United States twice. And every time I travel west from India or from Mauritius, South Africa, there is a feeling of elation. You know, I am gaining time. I am gaining time. So, supposing I get into a rocket and start flying all the time, west, 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 will I, one of these days, become 23? I should. But then suddenly I discovered, only recently, I asked travel agents in Montreal to draw up an itinerary for me to go from Canada back to Mauritius. And that lady said, look Swami, you lose one day. You are crossing the international date line, and just that imaginary affair is going to cost you one day. Right? So whatever we do, we cannot recall the past, remake it. What am I worried about? But people who want to worry, you know, they can worry about anything. I saw a wonderful girl in Durban, South Africa. Brilliant. I think she has a degree in science. And she had been declared mad. I was taken to see her. I found she was very intelligent. But terribly depressed. Very intelligent. Charming. She was able to look after her body and whatever she had to do perfectly well, but she was depressed. Immediately I went in, she asked me, Swami, is it true? What is true? Some science journal had announced that at the rate at which the sun is burning up helium, all the hydrogen atoms would be exhausted in 200 million years. And therefore the sun will become cold, and therefore the earth will freeze, everything will die. She says, is that true? Is that true that the earth will freeze? She makes it sound as though it's going to happen the next half hour. 200 million years, what is? Why are you worried about it? But then it's real for her. She has been shocked, as you would say. We think she's a fool. Aren't we doing the same thing? Every day of our life? Look at your own worries, look at your own fears. What are you afraid of? Either something which happened in the past, I scolded that man, I quarreled with that man. Maybe he will hit me, or maybe he will destroy me, maybe he will do some witchcraft. Or worry concerning the future. Another pathetic, pathetic stupidity. Again, I came across in South Africa. A multi-millionaires. This one in Devon. She's no more, she's dead. One day I was taken to her house. It was not a house, it was some palace. Even the Prime Minister of South Africa doesn't have such a lovely house. Huge big mansion. And she has a Rolls Royce, her daughter has a Rolls Royce, and her son-in-law has another Rolls Royce. A fleet of all sorts of cars, and then a couple of lovely cars for guests, and then in case some of these things broke down, a couple of extras. Huge garden, huge, everything big, huge palace. Twice I went to meet her. One day privately, I couldn't see her face at all. Must have been somewhere there, underneath all the makeup. About 1 or 2 inches thick makeup. I don't know what. And I suppose even the makeup makes your voice grow gruff, no? Huh? No? Sort of. I think it. No, it sort of like plastering the wall. And also perhaps she was also drinking fairly heavily. Hello Swami, please. And he was somehow interested in the spirits and so on. She was a widow. Now, listen to the family. She was a widow She had two daughters, that's all. One was in South Africa, one is in Australia. This daughter in South Africa was also married to a man who was over 20 years younger. And they had one son. That is all the family. This girl is not going to have any more babies. That's all the family. The family in South Africa consisted of these four people. And the other girl in Australia, she is very well off. She is also a huge business and so on. And this woman is a multi-millionaire. Second time I went to see her, she was going to organize a meeting. I couldn't see her face at all. Because diamonds and diamonds and diamonds, sparkling everywhere, blah, 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 sparkling with diamonds. Where is the face now? Well, good to see the face. Oh, fabulously rich. Incidentally, this is beside the point. Once she asked me to have dinner with her. The dining hall, you know, the chandeliers and sparkling, everything is sparkling everywhere. And then on the dining table itself, there are some fountains and colored, this colored, that, and the image of Venus and all sorts of things, but no food. Nothing to eat. The thing that comes around is only half a banana. And of course, the African waiter comes to all the white gloves and says, oh, sir, he said, what is that you eat here? I mean, we sit on the floor and eat, this is much better dinner. Now, that's not the point. When I was about to leave South Africa, she met me, I think it was this time in Cape Town. She said, please pray for me, Swami. You need some prayer, no doubt. She does need some prayer. What for? You know my little grandson. Sometimes I look at him, and she's very serious while saying this. Sometimes I look at him, I wonder if when he grows up, he will be satisfied with what little I can leave for him. Or he might think that his grandmother left nothing for him and he got broke. I nearly wanted to say, you must be mad, crazy. With the money that you are going to leave this grandson, a whole country can be fed for 10 years. Can you? Probably you and I cannot understand this. And probably psychologists may have their own theories why this is so and why this is not so. But basically, we are all subject to this foolishness. All the time we are worrying ourselves about an unknown, unborn future. A dead and crystallized past. From the past we may learn our lessons that needs a tremendous alertness in order to do so, but we cannot alter the past. We have a feeling that we may be able to shape our future. Okay. I concede that there is a possibility. But then, if you ask the yogi who says this, you can shape your future, what must I do? He is going to say, live in the present. Be a yogi now, in the present, naturally your future is made. Your present it is that is going to make your future. So one may be right in suggesting that in that case, why must I even bother about the future at all? If I look after the present, if I live the present in such a manner that I am an enlightened human being. I am free from cares and worries and fears and neuroses. Naturally, the future is going to be nice. I don't have to make the future, you know what I mean? I'm getting excited about the how the future is going to be. Then the future is going to be what? Excitement, nervousness, tension. I'm already tense. And this is what is going to flow down towards the future. This is a great message that Krishna gives us in the Gita. Ashochya nanvachochastvam. It's a beautiful thing, and I have used it as a sort of mantra. Can you imagine these people? Yesterday I gave a story, some fellow died, Nasir. If only he knew, after all, I'm also going to die, you know, these days. What is so important about staying in power? If I remove this ideology of staying in power, I must wield power. Then the whole situation becomes clear. Then it is then that I can promote peace. I am going to die in any case. What am I trying to do? By pushing myself, by acquiring this power, by hoisting myself on the throne of power, I am only killing myself. Probably, if I had not wielded that power, I might have lived. You know, the classical example of the Prince of Wales, yes? What's it called? No, Duke of Windsor. Yeah? Classical example. The man, he gave the crown and came away, and he's still alive. Happy and kicking, I'm sure. Alive and kicking. But the others who put on the crown are there, they're all rolling in dust. It was, I don't know, it was with a very mixed feeling of joy and pity that one read what he is supposed to have said. What was the last funeral? What was the last funeral he attended? King Edward, was it? His brother.
Huh?
George VI. It seems at that time he said, I have attended so many funerals, I have seen so many kings being buried. Edward the Queen Victoria's son.
Edward
the Seventh. And then George the Fifth.
George the Fifth.
And then
George the Sixth.
My grandfather, my father, my brother. I have seen all of them. And then the Queen Victoria also.
Yeah.
Queen Victoria also. He said, I have seen all of them being buried. He is a wise man, right? Whether we don't have to idolize him. But that's wisdom. So one who is devoted to wisdom. Wisdom and yoga are interchangeable terms. Enlightenment, yoga, wisdom, all these are synonymous terms. One who acquires this wisdom is not so terribly worried and afraid of either the past or the future. He is aware that the present alone is in his hands and makes the very best use of that present. Which obviously is able to build the right type of future. Ashochya nanvachochastvam. You are worrying yourself unnecessarily. By worrying myself, am I going to improve the situation? We discussed a similar idea yesterday. If I have a heart attack and collapse here, and if she comes there, oh Swami, and she also collapses, is she helping me? Is she making my life better? On the contrary, instead of one ambulance, you have to call for two ambulances. And the maximum attention that might have been given to me is now divided between the two of us. has worry ever saved any situation? Has worry ever helped anyone do something better? No. On the contrary, if I concentrate all my attention on the present, then I'll do my very best. I'm here. I'm here on this earth to do my very best in every given situation. From moment to moment, I must do. I must act. I must function. I must live. 100%. It is only when I fragment my personality, split it up into three pieces, one piece living in the past, one piece living in the future, it is then I am not living 100%. One who is not concerned with the past or with the future is all integrated, which is yoga. He is a yogi. He lives 100% in the now. And therefore he is efficient. I remember what a colleague of mine in the Government of India said. We were good friends, but the boss was somehow cross with my colleague. Oh, they used to have rough time with each other. I had given up the job and gone to Rishikesh. After some time, I came back to Delhi, went to the office, went to meet my colleague. I asked him, how are you getting on with the boss? Sorry for some swear words, but I am repeating what he said. He said, Mr. Sarthi, I do my best. I have registered it as a sort of mantra for me. I do my best, and no man can do better than his best. If the boss is pleased, okay. And if he is not pleased, let him go to hell. I think that is saying it so beautifully. You agree? If he is pleased, all right. If he is not pleased, let him go to hell. What can I do? Can I try to please you? If I am worried about pleasing you, and worry is chopping me up into fragments, into pieces, I am not integrated. I am not relaxed. I am tense. How can I please you at all? You can sense it, can't you? Let's say a new girl, she's married to a nice man. She wants to please him. She wants to do everything that will please him. She takes a lovely cup of coffee, and she wants to please him. And she puts on a smile. She puts on a smile not because she is smiling inside, to please him. And that smile is no smile. Do you follow this? That smile is no smile at all. It is there. Something else is making her smile. And then she says, coffee. her hands are shaking. He's probably going to drop it on his lap. Whereas, if she completely forgot about this man and did her job properly, she would probably behave better. Please him better. Therefore, in all this, to be able to live in the eternal now, to be able to observe and see the truth as it is, not as it was or as it may be or will be, that is what gives life its true meaning. I have only got the now. That's all I have. I might have committed a million mistakes or sins or whatever it is. That's all past. Nothing that you and I can do is going to cancel it. Probably it's not necessary. I don't know. Never. If I I had done something wrong. For instance, if I had eaten something wrong yesterday, I can't possibly uneat it now. What is eaten. I can't possibly uneat it now. But I have now a condition which may be due to the wrong eating yesterday. This is stomach pain. Okay, deal with that. You're clear. So even here, I am not concerned at all how many sins I committed last year or the year before or since my childhood. I am not going to keep on collecting an inventory of my own foolishness. But if I look at myself now, I can see these are the scars that have been left by those vicious actions in the past. So deal with them. That is wisdom. This is wisdom. If I deal with them now, probably the future will be better. But that is not my aim. If my aim is making a better future, I am going to be anxious. I am going to be worried. I am going to be worried that it may not be so. Have you come across this feeling? Huh? You do something wonderfully and 80% or 90% you are sure that it's going to turn out to be glorious. But then somewhere, some fellow is coming up, it may not be so. Worry. Huh? That's what these positive thinking people say, no? Then this may not be so slowly occupies your entire consciousness and brings that about. Naturally you become inefficient. Naturally you become nervous. Naturally you become impotent. Whereas I forget all that. What is it going to be? I don't know. Even if I have to plan, this question is very often asked. Then shall we not plan at all, living in the present? Even if we have to plan, what do we do? You have a picture of what you want to do, let's say in the immediate future, and take that action today which has to be taken today. This is part of that plan. I'll give you an example. I'm going to New Zealand from here, New Zealand or Australia from here. I asked, as I said, these travel agents to draw up the itinerary. That was done. Naturally, it had to be done now. I'm only interested in what has to be done now. Even concerning those events which I am planning in the near future. So today we went to the New Zealand consulate, got the visa. That has to be done now. That does not mean, however, that I am so keen on going to New Zealand that I would be disappointed if my aeroplane is hijacked to Cuba. Perfectly all right. We'll start another ashram there. Huh? Start another yoga temple. So you see, I have this plan, and as part of that plan, today this has to be done, I do it. And there, it's forgotten. A little later, something else may have to be done for the plan. So you have the diary, engagement pad. Note it down. That day this has to be done. Maybe it's all part of the whole plan, but this day only, enough unto the day, the evils are off. That's all. One who lives in this fashion is free from fear, is free from worry, is efficient, is peaceful, is wise, is a yogi. It does not mean that he is indifferent. It does not mean at all that he is irresponsible. People very often mistake one for the other.
This is not a responsibility. The yogi does take a total, take a good look at the total picture, including the future. Having looked at it, he determines this must be done today. Then this worry is eliminated from our life. Fear is eliminated from our life. When fear and worry are gone, then we are whole, we are integrated. It is then that we become yogis. What causes this fear? Why is a man worried at all? What is the root cause? Basic. Ignorance. That is why many people are taking shortcuts to the removal of ignorance. You know what that is? Many. And this was considered the Oriental superstition till about 15-20 years ago, but now it is Occidental wisdom or fashion. Western, huh? Correct. Astrology or I Ching or tarot cards, all sorts of things. In other words, people are asking, if only, now look at this funny attitude again, if only we know what is going to happen, we may be wiser. Is that the type of knowledge that we are looking for? I said ignorance is the cause of this worry and fear. What is the type of knowledge that can remove this ignorance? Is it the knowledge of what's going to happen? Astrology, palmistry, tarot cards, I Ching. Is that what I'm looking for? No. How is that going to help me at all? It will take all the fun out of life. And I have a famous question which I ask, keep asking nearly every astrologer I meet. Supposing I meet an astrologer today and he says, Swami, this gentleman is going to rob you next month. Then I make sure that I avoid his company from now on. If he goes east, I go west. If he goes south, I go north. Then what happens? That gentleman doesn't rob me at all. Forewarned, to be forewarned is forearmed. I turned around, asked the astrologer, how am I certain that you didn't bluff me and create sort of misunderstanding between the two of us? We were friends till you came along and sowed this seed of suspicion in me. How am I certain that you said the right thing and I avoided it? Or maybe it was not meant to happen at all? Is this the knowledge we want? Is this the way to remove the ignorance that can dispel worry and fear? Not at all. We are only escaping from one situation. Probably we'll create a similar situation later on. I'll escape from him and go and get into trouble with somebody else, somewhere else. And therefore, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives us a type of knowledge of the truth which enables us to ignore the past and to ignore the future, to realize that the present holds the key to eternity. If I know who you are, if I know who I am, if I know what our relationship is, I don't have to look into the future at all. Why must I bother about the future? I know what I am. I know what you are. I know our relationship. If I know this, then I'm free, completely free, totally free from all worry, from all fear, from all anxiety. It is this type of knowledge that Krishna wants us to acquire. This type of enlightenment that we should seek. Once this enlightenment is there, then the future lights up. That does not mean that you will know when exactly you are going to die and in what circumstances, who is going to be with you and who is going to be not with you. You know, all these things can lead to terribly funny situations. Supposing you and your husband, you are very close to each other. And suddenly somebody, some fortune teller, astrologer or clairvoyant and stuff and nonsense, he comes and tells you that I can see the day you are dying. 3 days before your husband abandons you, goes away, the result, you have started hating him already. Naturally he will go. If you start hating him like this right from now, naturally he will abandon you and go. What else do you expect him to do? So this is all totally foolish. Foolish, childish. What we need is knowledge of the truth, knowledge of the self, knowledge, therefore, of you, me, everyone, and knowledge of our true relationship. As usual, we should meditate for a few minutes. I'll tell you what we have been doing so far. We start with watching the breath, listening to the breathing, then we listen to a mantra. Listening to the breathing leads us to listening to a mantra. And if there are any intruding thoughts, we become aware of them. We don't think them, we look at them, we see them, we become aware of those thoughts. Probably, as we become aware of those thoughts, they will disappear.
ಪೂರ್ಣಮದಃ ಪೂರ್ಣಮಿದಂ ಪೂರ್ಣಾತ್ ಪೂರ್ಣಮುದಚ್ಯತೇ ಪೂರ್ಣಸ್ಯ ಪೂರ್ಣಮಾದಾಯ ಪೂರ್ಣಮೇವಾವಶಿಷ್ಯತೇ. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿಃ ಶಾಂತಿಃ.